Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Got a few.
Here's John Williams.
Today. Holy cow, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. On social media, I'm WGN King John. The Mincing Rascals is a podcast I record with friends of mine here at WGN and the Tribune. The Mincing Rascals judge the best in the city. Boy, we'll have something to talk about on Thursday. I think people are going to be talking about this story for a very long time. So you and I weren't there that night, January 29th, 2019, when it was 9 degrees below zero. We'll never know exactly what happened. What we are left with today is Jussie Smollett's version of events, and then what you heard from Eddie Johnson and Rahm Emanuel, which is a very different narrative, and the anger that the mayor spoke with, and Eddie Johnson's almost dismay in that press conference, I think spoke for a lot of people. And so you ask yourself, okay, what did happen that night? Our news click has two options, and we'll ask you at WGNradio.com to tell us what you think happened, because you know what? That's what we're left with. The documents are sealed. There's not going to be a case. The state won't pursue it. Now, one of the attorneys representing Jussie Smollett is Ron Safer, and he joins us now on WGN Radio. Ron, thanks for giving us some of your time today. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. You all must feel, I don't know, a sense of victory or relief today?
Yes, I think both of that. I think there's a sense of vindication. All charges were dismissed. They should not have been brought. And we're gratified that this is over for Jussie.
I want to ask you what your or his version of events are from that night. I also want to bring into the conversation WGN Radio and ABC News' Ryan Burrow. Ryan, you're there too, right?
Yeah, I was, and just saw what the mayor and superintendent had to say, and they're not happy right now, John, with how this all went down.
Well, then, Ron, what's your reaction to the mayor and the superintendent's comments to all of us just moments ago?
Well, I did not hear them. I have heard the superintendent's statements to the press at the onset of this case. They were wrong. They were inaccurate. They should not have been made. I was a federal prosecutor for 10 years. I prosecuted extraordinarily high-profile cases. You do not comment on the evidence at time of indictment. You do not comment on the evidence, certainly during an investigation, because of exactly what happened here. And that is that the superintendent of police became committed publicly to a set of facts that turned out to be completely untrue.
I want to tell you that when that was happening, a lot of us noticed that it was odd that Eddie Johnson was as angry and as visible as he was. He went on national TV as well. But then tell us what happened that night. What does Jussie Smollett conclude? What do you want us to think happened that evening?
Well, it is what happened. I mean, what happened is he was beaten. Period.
So he was the victim of the hate crime as described. The bleach, the noose, the homophobic slur, the weird MAGA shout, all of that happened that night at 2 o'clock in the morning.
It happened.
And do you believe that the two brothers are the ones that did it?
They confessed to it. He doesn't know.
Okay, but I'm sorry. So Jussie does know them, correct?
He knows them. Yes,
and did he recognize
people were wearing masks?
They were wearing masks, so he didn't recognize them beyond those masks.
He did not,
and
he was. Only one person made himself evident; the other person was behind him. It all happened extraordinarily quickly. All of that is well documented.
Is Jussie certain that it was them?
No, he's not certain at all.
All Jussie knows is that he was attacked. He doesn't know that it was the brothers.
Exactly.
So two men attacked him whose identities we may never know. What a coincidence that it would be two guys, or coincidence, not the right word, but how strange. What would the motive be for at least one of his fellow actors to attack him at 2 in the morning when it's 9 degrees below zero, just waiting for him to get into town and walk by that sandwich shop? That seems so unlikely, doesn't it?
No, there is more to the story, and there are potential motives, but I am not going to engage in the guesswork that the police have engaged in here, and that ultimately the state's attorney's office rejects. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get into what might have happened. All I know is what did happen, and that's what I'm happy to chat about.
And I appreciate your time on this. Ryan Burrow, you're listening to this from WGN Radio. Where are you right now, by the way, Ryan?
I'm making my way to the station right now. I did pull off to the side of the road, so don't worry, no talking and driving for me. But the one question I wanted to bring up, the Chicago police superintendent laid it out, and he says his department stands by the investigation. The mayor says that only a sliver of the information was out there, and yet still there was a 16-count indictment out of all that. It wasn't just the police's word versus Mr. Smollett's word. There were a lot more factors. So what would be your response to that?
Well, first of all, the 16 counts are identical.
It's 8 times 2, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 8 times 2, and each of the 8 counts are identical. So this could have been a 1-count charge. The fact that it is 16 is for drama's sake. It has zero effect, and that the mayor would say that is disappointing. Secondly, There are a lot more facts. The only facts that there were the facts that became clear that virtually everything that the superintendent of police said was wrong. And objective evidence proved that it was wrong, and they had to retreat from it. The state's attorney's office, who ultimately would have had to have come into court and been embarrassed to go forward with the case because the proof was quite different than the superintendent indicated. The superintendent would have been a witness, because how in the world did he get this version of facts that was so at odds with objective evidence?
But what do you say to the grand jury? I mean,
well, the grand jury gets one side of the story. The grand jury does not hear at all from the other side.
But if the grand jury finds sufficient evidence for a case, then isn't that the reason? Eddie Johnson said, have the day in court. The mayor said, I would never hide behind a brokered deal. If the grand jury finds sufficient reason, then why not go forward with it?
Well, first of all, because the grand jury hears a small portion of one side of the case.
Correct.
They don't hear the full explanation.
Well, they're not there to judge a person's guilt or innocence. They're there to let a jury decide. I'm sorry.
They're there to determine whether there is probable cause to believe that the person committed a crime. The state's attorney has to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. This was not a brokered deal. This was a dismissal of charges. And the state's attorney's office must have concluded that they could not prove these charges by any standard of proof when all of the evidence was heard by a jury.
On a phone line is one of the attorneys that have been representing Jussie Smollett. Ron Safer is joining us, the lawyer at Riley Safer Holmes and Kinsella. In the newsroom, Eric Rung has a question, too.
You know, one question that I continually get asked as a reporter that's worked on this case is, you have two brothers that are very large individuals, in shape, very strong individuals. How was it that Jussie Smollett had very few injuries from this case?
Yeah, I don't think that they wanted to maim him. I don't think they, whoever attacked him, wanted to permanently injure him. You know, they were making a point. They made their point, and that's what they intended to do.
And what? Well, I'm sorry. Now, was it the brothers or not?
I don't know.
Okay, so
I don't know. The brothers have confessed to it. I don't. But you know, Jussie doesn't know who it is.
We're going to visit maybe with one of the brothers' attorneys, but the city is not pursuing charges against them. What's a listener to make of that?
The city ought to cease and desist as quickly as possible and return to the extraordinarily important business of reducing the murder rate that should be done, taking guns off the street. All of the things that the Chicago Police Department does, that the mayor is focused on, and that they ought to return to that good work,
Ron,
and be done with all of this.
A lot of people are curious as to why then Jussie or you don't fight for the bond back. If he's out $10,000, why not, if he's innocent of any charges, Jussie's the victim here, why does he have to give up $10,000?
First of all, cost. Are taken out of that whether you are completely exonerated. I've had people been exonerated after 30 years, and what they get back from their bond is a sense, because costs are taken out whether you're exonerated or not. It's not worth it, and it was a factor in getting this done now. And it was important that we look, if we had gone to trial, it would have been an embarrassment.
What would have been an embarrassment?
It would have been an embarrassment for the state. They could not, you know, the truth would have come out totally. It would have been clear that the state's case was shredded, and they didn't want to do that. We had an interest in not having that take a year. If we could have a trial today, great. That's not the way the system works.
All right, I have.
He'd have to live with this for a year.
One moment, if you will, Ron, and that is back into the WGN Radio newsroom, Eric.
Yeah, the state's attorney's office now has come out with a statement to the Tribune that said that this was an agreement and that this does not exonerate him. Do you have a comment on that?
It's an agreement. It's not a plea agreement. There is no plea. There are no charges.
But there was an agreement made between the parties. Is that?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And they
would dismiss all charges against him.
They also said that this did not exonerate him.
You know, I don't understand that. I don't understand, again, as a former prosecutor, that makes no sense to me.
Well, I'll take a shot at it. It seems to me like if you can't prove it doesn't necessarily mean it didn't happen. Imagine the burden for Kim Fox's office to prove that Jussie staged this sort of thing. We don't have video. We don't see him scuffing up his face. We don't see or have tape of him, say, colluding with the brothers making the deal. So while it sure looks fishy, and the police and the mayor and everybody else sure is convinced this thing looks staged, how can you prove it without video or without something besides a he said they said? So Kim Fox drops the case. I understand the burden there. I also understand why that doesn't exonerate Jussie Smollett. They can't prove it.
What a horrible situation you've put him in. Extrapolate that to any innocent individual. Somebody is charged because somebody believes that something happened, and then those charges are dropped. But that's not an exoneration. Maybe they did it. We should be very suspicious. That is about as contrary to everything that our criminal justice system stands for.
Understood.
As anything I can think of.
I'm so glad
and
you said
why
that.
Why is it that you say that this certainly looks fishy? Because you are dealing with a set of facts that the superintendent of police put out that are blatantly untrue.
Well, but you agreed to the description of the crime as Jesse reports it, and I think people think that is hard to believe, that at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's 9 degrees below zero. Who the hell knows where Jesse Smollett is? And by the way, that's
people do.
And that's not...
people do.
Okay, so fine. So let's just own this story then. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's 9 degrees below zero. A couple of guys, I guess, are stalking Jesse Smollett. Maybe they're white guys because they dropped the MAGA thing, and they watch Empire, and they have stalked Jesse Smollett, who most people don't even really know. I'm sorry, but he's not a household name like he is now. And people, and these two guys are going to find him, and then they're going to put a rope around his neck, maybe pour bleach on him, beat him up a little bit, and then say, this is MAGA country. To what end? I mean, maybe that happened, but you've got to appreciate how bizarre and hard to believe that is for people.
Yeah, there are potential motives that if it was these two people, there were potential motives that they had to do exactly what you described.
Can you help us with that?
I'm not going to engage in the kind of character assassination and guesswork that Jesse has been a victim of here. Not going to do that.
One last question from one of our listeners.
Yes.
Is he going to sue the city, the mayor, the police chief? Is there any civil recourse for your client?
If these kind of statements are continued to be made that are outrageous, he may have no choice but to do that. He would like to go on living his life. By the way, one fact that didn't come out, he didn't call the police. He didn't want to call the police. He didn't want to put anything out there. The idea that, as a superintendent of police says, that he's doing this to get publicity or for some kind of other publicity stunt, totally wrong. Did you know that he didn't call the police?
Help me out with that. How were the police then made aware of this?
Another person who witnessed him after the fact called the police expressly against Jesse's wishes and his expressed desires. Has that fact come out? That doesn't square with what the superintendent of police is saying. Doesn't square with the set of facts that make this fishy. But it does square with the truth and the fact that Jesse didn't do anything to aggrandize himself or put this story out there or waste anybody's resources. He didn't even call the police.
Ron Safer is a lawyer at Riley Safer Holmes and Consilla. I appreciate your time, Ron. We may call you again today or tomorrow just as more questions come to light, but I think you've represented your client well here, and we sure appreciate your time, sir.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.